You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal. But everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're dedicating today's show to, I'm going to call it cyber awareness, cyber education, so that we can prevent cyber crimes, specifically and perhaps most importantly and acutely, cyber crimes against children. The world today has a new pope. 1.4 billion Catholics have a new pope, Pope Leo the 14th. Central to his work as a missionary and our prior pope was protecting those that are most vulnerable. Certainly those that are most vulnerable amongst us are children. A big thanks to John DeMay, a former law enforcement officer who lost his son after his son Jordan took his life following a sextortion scheme in March of 2022. It happens that today in the state of Wisconsin is the annual conference on missing and exploited children. And I'm super thankful to have joining me the DOJ Special Agent in Charge of Wisconsin's ICAC, which is the acronym that stands for Internet Crimes Against Children, Jesse Crow. Jesse, thank you so very much for making time. I know you guys have this conference going on. You're extremely busy. Thank you for making time. I think a lot of people, when they think about internet crimes against children, they think of the sexual predator that, meets a kid online, begins a friendship, gets them to show up, the Dateline sort of expose thing. Certainly a risk. They think about someone meeting their kid online and then trafficking them. Also an incredible problem. But how acute is the risk that is being posed to our young people from sexploitation specifically, Jesse?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. This is a huge topic, and I know John was just on, and he's our hero in this race to try and get this figured out. So the kids are out there trusting too many people online, and there are a lot of criminals out there that want to do this type of crime. And that's one of the huge issues, that it's not necessarily the sexual part of ICAC. It is the risk because of the financial side of it. But it still has a sexual component, which makes it very devastating.
Yeah, thanks, Jesse, for that. One of the questions that I have heard from folks is that in certain circumstances, one of the things that makes interdiction, prevention, prosecution difficult is that in some jurisdictions, the kids have faced criminal charges for dissemination of the material. Is that an issue here in Wisconsin? Who makes those judgments? Is that you in conjunction with the Attorney General's office working with local law enforcement? How does that work? Do kids need to be worried that they might face criminal charges?
They absolutely should not worry about that. They are sending images that they are victims of crimes. And that's one of the big messages we try to get out, is that you have to reassure them that whatever they sent to that person, they cannot get in trouble for or be charged with that crime. The suspects use that against them, and they tell them that they're going to be a sex offender when that is not true. They, victim rights, are there for that protection. And that's a huge message we give out. You cannot be charged with that crime.
Thanks so much, folks. This is Jesse Crow. He's the special agent in charge at Wisconsin's ICAC in the Department of Justice. ICAC, of course, Internet Crimes Against Children. This week, they are having their big conference here in Wisconsin. Jesse, what can parents do? If folks are listening, they've got a teenager at home, what should parents do to help educate themselves and their kids? Are there ways to walk phones down? I don't know. Tell people what they can do if they're worried about this happening in their families.
Yeah, absolutely. So educate themselves. Parents and guardians have to educate themselves about the internet, and at least with the apps or the platforms that their children are using. Make sure that you have a conversation with a child. We use the hashtag start the conversation. That is the most important thing. We give children technology at a very early age, maybe an iPad to watch YouTube on when they're 5 or 6. Have that conversation then and start having that conversation early so that when they're 14, 15, 16, it's not instantaneous, like this is the first time we're talking about it. Have a plan. I'm going to be a trusted adult to the child in my life. I am not going to freak out. I think John's used that word in a couple of presentations I've had. As a parent, don't freak out on the outside, because they need to know that they are going to be safe. They can come to you for that advice and for the help that they need. You talked a little about locking down phones. The standard platforms that are out there through either the OS system or the Android system, they have native parent controls built into them already. There are tons of third-party ones that you can buy. But if you're using a phone or giving a child a phone, make sure you learn about those controls, because that might be very important. And setting rules. I know kids don't like rules at times, but it's technology. And you know, we always say that by giving technology to your kids, you're inviting in a lot of different people into your house that maybe you don't know, and have those conversations.
So many really important elements there, Jesse. The first one that I wanted to reemphasize is parents or trusted adults, that young people whom this is happening to, if they come to you, don't freak out. If you act like the world is ending, the odds that kid is going to maintain their own mental composure is literally zero. And parents, entertain the possibility that maybe you might not be the right adult for your kid to bring this to. So talk about that. Identify someone else. No kid in healthy parent-child relationships wants to admit that, man, I just screwed up, and it's in this most embarrassing, most mortifying way. So maybe finding an alternative trusted adult that you, the parent, can identify with your child if something like this were to happen before it happens can be incredibly helpful. And then use the parental controls that are on phones as they are available. The way I look, I mean, I'm in my late 40s. I did lots of stupid stuff when I was a kid. I didn't have to worry about a criminal network from Nigeria targeting me because I've got the world's criminal networks in the palm of my hand through my phone. It's you know, kids are kids. They make wrong decisions, but the consequences, because of the access that these phones give to very sophisticated, very well-organized, very well-trained criminals, that's what's new here, not the fact that kids do stupid things sometimes.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's you know, having that trusted adult that they know is not going to freak out, but also is going to protect them and help them. That is so vital, because a lot of these suicides that happen, they're in the home with the parents. They just don't have they're so embarrassed, and they have to know that it's not their fault, so they get past that embarrassment and know I can go to that person and tell them this, that I need help. I think that's the biggest thing. Get the word out and have those conversations.
I wanted to play us a little bit. I interviewed State Senator Jesse James today. He was one of the co-sponsors of legislation to make this its own unique crime with significant punishments. He referenced some controversy. I wanted to play you a little bit of the interview and get your reaction, Jesse. Let's take cut 23, if you could, Jacob.
I'm willing to openly negotiate and compromise with whatever this looks like to get something, to see the increase first go through. Maybe if there's some interest to have this applicable to only children under the age of 18, I'm all right with that. The adults, you know, I'm always willing to negotiate, because this is the primary thing for me, is looking out for the best interests of the children. Mm-hmm. Because like what you mentioned earlier, their brains aren't fully formed yet. They're having a hard time. They're going through puberty. Every life making decision at their age, like whatever clothes they're going to wear, how they're going to do their hair. And it's all crisis. It truly is. I mean, such huge decisions for them to make at that such young age. And they're so vulnerable. I guess that's my point. When you get over 18, it's kind of like my philosophy. As soon as you turn 18, you're considered an adult by state statute. It's up to you what you do and how you live your life. I don't care. But prior to that, our parents need to be invested. They need to be informed. They need to know what the kids are doing on their cell phones. And it's okay to look at it. And if they find something, put it in airplane mode right away. Call law enforcement and stand up.
Stand up for your kids. Special agent in charge of the Wisconsin Internet Crimes Against Children, Jesse Crow, is with us. That was sound of Wisconsin Senator Jesse James. Attorney General Josh Call, this is bipartisan or cross-partisan, whatever word you want to say about it, supports this legislation to criminalize sextortion specifically. Jesse, is this a good idea? Will this be a helpful tool for law enforcement?
It definitely could be. It's going to enhance those penalties. Right now, it's difficult to charge some of these. With the suicide, if it's a suspect that's here in Wisconsin or in the United States, it will give us that more teeth that we can bring them back here for that. It's great to have them working on the statute, and hopefully they can get it passed, because it would help immensely.
And then last, I wanted to take this last bit of sound. This is again from Senator Jesse James on the newly introduced legislation here in Wisconsin to increase those penalties, help give law enforcement, like my current guest, DOJ's Jesse Crow. He's the special agent in charge at Wisconsin's ICAC. Let's take cut 24.
It's out of love, and that's what our children need to understand. And I know that sometimes they feel that their parents don't love them. Because I felt like that as a kid myself. I mean, let's be real. It's not like we're going through new things with our children. I've been there. I've done that. So I think just the children know that we're there. And just if they feel vulnerable, if they've been impacted, you know, we're working on another legislative piece that was bringing controversy yesterday with Aaron's Law. It's bringing sexual education in through 4K all the way to 12th grade, because right now the public school system only goes to 5th grade, and we made it in their language age-appropriate material for them going through. It was very funny. This was a yesterday hearing that we had. So there's a lot of things going on, but my primary focus is protecting our children and giving them the tools and resources that they know are available to them.
Folks, that's Senator Jesse James. We're going to have him back again on the show to talk about that. With me right now is the special agent in charge of Wisconsin's Internet Crimes Against Children Division of the Wisconsin Department of Justice. Jesse, talk to the kids out there right now. If they're experiencing this, what should they do?
You need to tell a trusted adult. You need to know that you're not alone, that you cannot be charged criminally for the images you sent, and that you are going to be okay with this. We will get through it and get some of that help. So I really appreciate that.
We will get through it. You are not alone. Please tell a trusted adult. Our discussion of cyber risk continues with an...
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, we talk about the day's news a lot on this program. I'm often responding to the things breaking in the news, but every once in a while, we take the time out to do a special show dedicated to one topic. And that was today's program. Today's program dedicated to cybersecurity, not just national security, but internet sensibilities and how do we protect ourselves and our families and especially our kids from the millions of would-be criminals lurking online. My next guest is the University of Wisconsin-Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Research Consortium. His name is Dave Shorter. And because Dave's bio is so super impressive, I usually don't spend this much time credentialing my guests, but I'm going to give you a little bit of Dave's background. He is a technologist and strategist. He is an expert. He's part of the UW Speakers Bureau. Again, he is the research director at the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium, home of the Wisconsin Information Security Center. He is an associate director for intelligence and security initiatives. He works to enable and advance initiatives on national security research and in partnership does this work with the Department of Defense and the entirety of the U.S. intelligence community. He also serves as a U.S. Army cyber warfare officer, a signal officer, and a military intelligence officer in the Wisconsin Army National Guard. He previously served as an information warfare officer, a cryptologic warfare officer. I don't know if I can say all these big words, Dave. And in the space cadre of the U.S. Navy, this guy knows a ton. And I'm so very privileged and humbled that you are spending some of your afternoon with us, Dave. Thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. And you can just shorten it by saying I'm a cyber dork.
Cyber. Oh, see, I love people that talk about dorks and wonks because I'm like, I'm a data geek. We can just all shorten it up. Yep.
We can do the Venn diagram of dorks.
Of geekiness.
And nerds.
Yes. And we all love our Venn diagrams if you're a wonk and a dork. Thank you, Dave, for being here. I know you were listening along to our discussion about sextortion. So I wanted to start, you know, sextortion, it is particularly repugnant as it targets minors, but this is happening to adults. Just a couple months ago, one of my best friend's parents was targeted, I believe, with an AI cloned imitated voice of one of her kids. Mom, I need help. Please send money. And it turned into a $50,000-$60,000. They took this woman for a retiree on a fixed income. Let's just start here real micro and then we'll build out, Dave. If for folks listening, good common sense internet hygiene practices, what are they? And then if people want to engage in sort of more offensive protection of their online information, that kind of thing, take us kind of through the gradations of locking down our internet and online presence.
Yeah. So, you know, the tips to protect yourself are some of the normal things that you hear about on the technical side, like, you know, keep your devices up to date and make sure you install the security updates when they're available. Don't ignore them as you're often tempted to because, you know, your devices are often asking you to update when you're in the middle of doing something else. So it's very tempting to hit that tomorrow, later button. But take the time to do those things. And, you know, I think even more than that, though, it is don't click links that you get unsolicited in text messages. Don't respond to those, you know, spam texts, you know, Facebook instant messages, the things that you get that are asking you to do something or that are urgently requiring your attention. You know, all of these scams and hoaxes share the same kind of
pattern, traits. Right? These commonalities, urgency, click on this thing, go do this thing, give me information. I'm sorry, I jumped in.
Yeah.
Getting all excited.
That's absolutely right. They're trying to get you to take action. I think broadly speaking about hoaxes and scams and things like that online, it's trying to get you to do something. And it's usually what that thing is separating you from your money. Mm. Or trying to separate you from your data, valuable information, financial information, or credentials, usernames and passwords, which they're then going to convert into money. So, you know, it's all about that kind of financial gain for the attackers. They often, you know, they do this for, essentially a living. Some of the people who do this are in, you know, essentially forced labor situations themselves. So it's, you know, sometimes the scammers are themselves victims, and it's really insidious because you're often dealing with people just like in the, you know, in the situation with John's son Jordan. These people are in foreign countries, and where, you know, often if they can scam someone out of several hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars, that is a lot of money, and that is, you know, that's money in the bank for a couple of weeks or a month. And so that's what they do. And, you know, the reason why people keep doing this is because it's successful. Mm. They keep doing it because people keep falling for it. And it's adults, it is kids, it is people who are smart, it's people who have PhDs.
It's a threat. Know. It's a threat for all of us. Sorry to jump in. We got to take care of some business. I got Dave Schroeder with me. He's the UW-Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium, a cyber dork. Your cyber questions answered. We talk national security and more about how to secure your family when we come back. 855-752-4842. Got a question? Dave's got answers. Text and phone lines are open. This is the Civic Media. Back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've dedicated today's program to cyber threats to our families, to our kids, to ourselves. And we're going to expand that discussion into much bigger questions of national security, election security, our infrastructure. We've got a fabulous expert with us. His name's Dave Schroeder. He's the UW-Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium, which is home to the Wisconsin Information Security Center. I love a good acronym salad. We'll just call Dave a cyber dork. His words, not mine. Thank you so much, Dave. We've been talking about how people can help secure their own online presence, the sort of hallmarks of these scams to look out for, the creating a false sense of urgency, often appearing to come from a family member or close friend, ultimately all inexorably moving towards two outcomes, which is directly separating you from your money or getting you to give up sensitive information that then allows them to access your money. It's always about the money.
That's right.
So I'll just make this observation at a really high level. It seems to me that in all governments, technology leads and we then struggle to catch up with it. And we're legislating sort of from behind where the apex or the front of the technology is. And that is certainly been the case when it comes to, for example, the crime of sextortion. Revenge porn, another thing that people, you know, gosh, what do we do about this? These were adults. And certainly it also falls in this area of just trying to secure people's personal information and what are the responsibilities of these platforms on which information is shared and these schemes are carried out. Dave, you're an expert. You study this way more than I could ever hope to get even a small slice of understanding about. When you think of really common sense policy or legislation that we should be talking about and asking our elected officials about, what are some, what I term low-hanging, obvious, yes, we need to do that policy or legislation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, part of the reason why this does not exist is because it's hard. It's hard to do. And not everyone's going to agree on how to do it. And there are, you know, there's compelling commercial interests on the side of all these platforms that, you know, don't want legislation that stops them from doing various things. And so what we end up with is this patchwork of laws that are different in every state, and some states don't have them at all, whether it is on things like privacy or sextortion or cybersecurity, and they're very reactive in nature, and it creates this situation that we're in now, where it feels like, you know, things are happening only after the fact, and that technology is kind of running away with everything. And that's a true, you know, even more so with things like artificial intelligence and the things that you see with deepfakes and right. And revenge porn that used to be, you know, actual, you know, sensitive pictures of someone that are now just, you know, completely
AI.
Made up.
Yep.
Yeah, they're made with AI, and there's, and you know, one tool goes away and two new tools pop up. So, you know, to get to your question though of what can be done from a policy standpoint. You know, I think that legislators, whether it's in a state or at the federal level, need to find things that we can agree on in a bipartisan way. And I think that protection of children online is one of the things that we can all get behind. And so one thing I wanted to talk about that wasn't touched on at all so far during this conversation is that the platforms could make this a lot harder for scammers with some pretty simple things. And I'll give you one example. One of them is, you know, and obviously people can use, you know, fake birth dates and all those things. But if you come on and create, like, let's say an Instagram account as a 14-year-old or something like that, and you use your real birth date, which a lot of kids do when they're creating their account, you know, it knows that it's a child's account. It could make the account private by default, direct messages private by default. And that one change alone would stop a lot of this in its tracks. And I just want to also mention to parents, or you know, kids who are listening, or anyone who has an account, you can, you know, make these changes to your account. And as a parent, it is really incumbent on us to take the time to understand how these things work, you know, whether it's the parental controls on iOS or Android, or the settings in things like Instagram and TikTok. And so, you know, you can sit down and say, okay, look, let's make the account private. Let's make sure that the DMs are set to only people that you know or that you're connected to. And, you know, the Yahoo boys and a lot of the scammers, they're just going to move on to the next target who doesn't have a private Instagram account. Now, does that maybe mean that you don't, you know, you're not as open with people who might want to connect with you, or, you know, everyone has that fear of missing out. You know, no one wants, well, what if that girl that I met at the party, like, wants to reach out to me and DM me, and we're not connected on Instagram. Like, you really need to lock these things down, and the platforms leave them open and public by default because it's good for their business model. Because being open and it's good for engagement, yep, is what it comes down to.
And engagement drives the money. That's what the platforms, yep, are built on. So I am a huge nerd about behavioral economics, and no one turned the channel because it's the econ version of what Dave's saying. And basically, the principle that Dave and I are talking about is to understand how humans actually behave and make the technology account for that. In other words, have the defaults on these platforms set to private. It does take time for parents, and I have taken the time, not perfectly, to go down the rabbit hole. It takes forever to find all of the privacy settings. For example, and this is just a stupid one, Dave, but I wanted to bring it up. Venmo. Your entire contact list on Venmo is public, and it's a different privacy setting than is your transaction setting public. Yep. It's two different things, and they do this all over the place. I think that's an incredibly important tip, Dave. Because we've got limited time, one, will you please come back with me, and we will have a longer form discussion about this. And secondly, we just saw, I want to talk about cybersecurity from a national security perspective. We just saw in Spain and Portugal what appeared potentially to be a hack shut down their grid. How are we doing here in the U.S.? Do we have good grid cybersecurity infrastructure?
Well, some of you may have heard of this thing called Volt Typhoon, which is a name that we've given some of the Chinese government hacking activities that have breached pretty much all sectors of critical infrastructure in the United States over a period of several years, and was designed, you know, we've come out and really publicly said this, was designed to essentially stage on our critical infrastructure so that the Chinese government could, at a time and place of their choosing, for instance, in the event of an invasion of Taiwan, take action in these sectors, whether it is shutting down, you know, water treatment facilities, pieces of the grid, and probably coinciding with pretty aggressive information operations, meaning, you know, targeted propaganda, actual fake news, video clips, things of that nature on platforms like TikTok, which is controlled by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. And mm-hmm. No such thing as a private company in China, especially when you have political officers at the company that are beholden to the Chinese Communist Party. So we're not doing well when it comes to the overall cybersecurity of our critical infrastructure. And it's not because there aren't good people doing good work and trying to keep things secure. It's just that we have such, again, a patchwork of systems, of processes, of capabilities, with the resources that go into these things are kind of all over the place. So you have large municipalities like New York City that are very well prepared. You have states that have put a lot of money at the state level, like Texas, into cybersecurity. And then you have the have-nots, smaller school districts, smaller utilities, smaller counties that don't have the same resources. And so that's why, I think there's concern over the cuts that CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency at the federal level, is now facing. And I look at this holistically. It's not just the technical. You know, with something like critical infrastructure security, yes, there's a technical component, but a lot of the nation state cyber actors like Russia and China also have a component to their attacks that are in the information domain to cause destabilization, to cause people to lose trust in institutions, whether it is media, whether it is government, whether it is elections. And we've seen this play out time and time and time again in Europe, in Africa, in the United States. This is this is part of their playbook, and this is foreign adversary aggression. And I hope that's something that as Americans we can all agree needs to be something that we defend against.
Folks, that's Dave Schroeder. He's the UW-Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium. Dave, will you stick around for one more segment? Because I want to ask you about the idea of disinformation and destabilization and mistrust of institutions and how people can be savvier consumers of information online. What are some of the hallmarks of those things? Just like we were talking about the hallmarks of misinformation. Do you have time for another segment, my friend?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Folks, if you have a question, Jack from Merrimack, I know you were on the lines. I didn't get to you. Please text it in 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You touched upon something that I think is really important. And if you could expand on this, and then we'll kind of talk about some best practices when we come back when it comes to disinformation. Cyber warfare, cyber attacks aren't just about shutting down a grid or shutting down an air traffic control system. They rely upon and interact with the cyber-based disinformation, misinformation, destabilization, information environment. That's what you're saying, right, Dave? I'm hearing that correctly. These are related phenomena.
Well, there's always a human element in any of these chains that we're talking about. You can have purely technical attacks, but these are systems that are all run and mediated by humans, and humans are the weakest link.
Folks, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the threat that online external nation-state adversarial actors, the online destabilization campaigns that we face here and abroad. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I can't believe it's already here. It's the last segment of this Thursday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. You're going to want to stick around. We got Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Take a little break from all the politics. We've had a very special episode today talking about cyber threats, online threats, both in our families and our homes, but also broadly the cyber threats posed to our country and our national security. I've got a great expert with us, Dave Schrader, the UW-Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium, a self-labeled cyber dork. Dave, as we closed out the last segment, we were talking about the intersections, the interrelationship, the inextricable intertwinement of disinformation campaigns by nation-state actors, our adversaries from a foreign policy perspective, and cyber attacks that are directed at the grid or cyber warfare more broadly, and that these things are of a whole. They're not really separable. You're not going to see one without the other. They operate in tandem. What do we as Americans, what should we be on the lookout for? How do we become better consumers of information online? How do we not, or perhaps in the affirmative, how do we make sure that we're not part of the disinformation warfare problem?
Yeah, well, you know, remember before when I was saying, you know, when we were starting about how do you protect yourself online and what are the scammers trying to do? What are the bad guys trying to do? And it was always that sense of urgency. And, you know, things like information operations campaigns by a foreign government, it's really another version of the same thing. It's trying to hit you in your emotional mind. It's trying to make you, often it's trying to make you angry or outraged. And when these campaigns are online, they're trying to get you to share, they're trying to go viral, they're trying to get people to think or behave in a different way. And, you know, in this case, it's maybe not to separate you from your money, but it's to separate you from reality. And that's really what we need to be on the lookout for. I think when you see content that, you know, it is something that really gets your blood pressure up, and keep in mind, these foreign actors often don't really care about what side of the issue they're on. They're just looking to stoke division. You know, when we're actually talking about these destabilization campaigns, that are, you know, that are targeted at a particular country, you know, before before an election, things of that nature. They're looking to destabilize. They're looking to break down trust, because they know that when, you know, people don't trust each other, that is a very damaging place for, you know, especially a democracy that is, you know, our system is built on trust. Our system is built on trust in institutions. And when you start to lose that trust, it's really difficult to get it back. Mm. So I think that as information consumers, you know, we need to be conscious of where the information is coming from and what it's trying to get us to do. And, you know, when we now have this kind of information economy that where everything gets compressed into sound bites and viral memes, you know, the nuance goes away. And it's kind of all about, you know, what's the best zinger, you know, you can get in on some topic. And it's a really difficult situation. And I think it's going to get worse with AI, because we're now getting to a place where, you know, you talked about something like where, you know, there's these kind of, you know, AI audio deepfakes where someone might be, you know, a daughter held hostage or something like that. And that's not the case. You know, when you have nation state actors deploying AI to, you know, easily create, you know, not just images or audio, but, you know, full video of events that never occurred, you know, it becomes less about what you see, you know, in a video clip, and more about the provenance or of the source of the information, and, you know, where did it come from? How can it be validated? Who do you trust to validate that information for you? And these are all really complex questions that we could talk about for another hour. So, you know, I'll just stop there and, you know, reflect on, you know, this is a, you know, it's an interesting, brave new world for sure.
If it is outrageous, be suspicious.
Vet
the source. Don't immediately repost. Take a minute. Pause.
That's right.
Think. Write some basic things. My big, big thanks to you, Dave Schrader. We're going to have you back. We're going to maybe spend an entire show talking about all these things. It is so important. Our democracy requires our discernment. It's a whole of nation responsibility to help secure our nation from these disinformation campaigns from foreign adversarial governments. Thanks, Dave Schrader. Folks, we are right up on it. I do have a wee bit of good sound for you to depart this afternoon. This was Senator Ron Johnson. If you've been worried about those cuts to Medicaid, et cetera, Trump's terrible plan to take our economy even further and hurt the middle class, here's Rojo today on Newsmax.
You know, additional tax provisions and getting down to a reasonable pre-pandemic spending level, but that's not the path we chose. So I think the sooner we acknowledge the fact that this current effort is doomed to fail. I'm sorry, I've got to disagree with the president on this. It's doomed to fail. I'm not going to vote for it. I know a number of senators who will not even come, would not even contemplate. This announcement right now, as it's being written, we would actually increase the deficit.
Yeah.
I don't think many people realize that. We would actually increase the deficit. That's a complete.
Oh, Ron, there's one thing you and I agree with. Yes, it would increase the deficit and give trillions in tax cuts to 100 millionaires and billionaires. Bad idea. That's going to do it for me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.